The economic managers of the incoming Marcos administration give a glimpse on how they will tackle the Philippines' economic woes. Later on in the program, we'll speak with the head of the group, Philippine Chamber of Agriculture and Food Incorporated, on their warning of a looming food shortage. Journalists up in arms over the exclusion of several networks from Thursday's press briefing of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky throws fresh criticism against the West over the ongoing Russian invasion. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, grow the economy and the rest will follow. That's the mindset of Philippine Central Bank Governor Benjamin Diokno as he assumes the post of Finance Secretary under the incoming Marcos administration. See, Diokno believes this can help address many of the country's economic woes, including the mounting debt from the pandemic.
Our problem really is to get back on our growth trajectory, because that will solve a lot of problems. If we grow at 6 to 7%, that solves our tax revenue problem. That will solve our deficit problem. That will solve our debt problem. The Duterte administration is going to leave to the incoming administration a much better tax structure than before, and it raises more taxes. So I'm not worried about the level of the debt. For example, that's 63%. That's easily manageable because as long as the economy can grow at 6 to 7%, which was our record before the crisis, we can easily outgrow our debt. And most of our debt are domestic rather than foreign.
As for returning socio-economic planning Chief Arsenio Balisagan, he says he will continue to push for equity as the next administration tries to come up with fiscal reforms.
Whatever fiscal consideration reforms you do, this should not come at the expense of those who are vulnerable and have and more need in life. Because I think if I go back in our history, whenever we have fiscal crisis, it's always those sectors where the poor are most concentrated. That took the heavy hit. Talking about education, health, and other sectors, including scholarships for the poor. These are usually the ones that are easy to be chopped. I don't think that's a good way to address the fiscal issue.
The appointments to the economic team of President-elect Marcos met with praises. The Makati Business Club said the appointments of experienced and well-known leaders will boost the confidence of local and foreign businesses in the new administration. For the Bankers Association of the Philippines, BSP Governor Benjamin Diokno and former NEDA Chief Felipe Medalla are the best choices for a finance chief and the country's top central banker. It adds, the Philippine economy can successfully navigate various challenges under their stewardship. As for House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Joey Salceda, he says Diokno being named as finance chief is by far the strongest appointment Marcos has made. The incoming president vows to go hard against corruption. Marcos says he will start by cleaning up the customs and internal revenue bureaus. He believes the pandemic-battered economy will not recover if the two revenue-generating agencies fail to collect tariffs and taxes efficiently. The incoming president's own family has yet to settle its 203 billion peso estate tax debt.
There should not be any place for corruption. Unfortunately, in some areas, naging endemic na talaga yung corruption. You will have to really dig deep. Ngayon ako na nang mamahala, so wala nang ganyan. At kung meron pang ganyan, habul-habulin talaga namin kayo. At hindi po pwede. We have to, at the very least, reduce the corrosive influence of corruption in government as a general rule.
Marcos's incoming press secretary insists pending graft and corruption cases against the Marcoses will not be shelved. The family is accused of amassing billions of pesos in ill-gotten wealth during the reign of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr. Well, President-elect Marcos says the ratification of the country's participation in the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership deal, or RCEP, should be re-examined. He says doing so would ensure the deal will not diminish the competitiveness of the local agriculture sector. For former Tariff Commissioner George Manzano, while there is wisdom to being cautious, the next government should also have a sense of urgency in deciding on the issue.
Well, I think what is at stake would be the long-term implications. RCEP is desirable because it can really facilitate trade. It is easier for us to attract foreign direct investments if we are part of that big network. It's also an insurance policy for us that when times are rough and there are protectionist sentiments because of disruptions in the world economy, that because of RCEP, the markets for our products will remain open.
The Philippines has yet to ratify its participation in RCEP. That's a free trade deal among ASEAN members, as well as Australia, China, Japan, South Korea, and New Zealand. RCEP covers about 30% of global GDP worth $26 trillion. The deal will allow more agricultural products from other countries to enter the Philippines with zero tariffs. Stakeholders and several business groups have opposing comments on the deal. Some have said participation in RCEP would boost economic growth, while others said it would negatively impact local farmers. Well, one of the major issues that the incoming Marcos administration could face later this year, food shortage. That's according to the Philippine Chamber of Agriculture and Food Incorporated. The group's president, Danilo Fausto, now joins us to tell us more about their dire warning. Mr. Fausto, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Karine.
All right. So first off, you warn of a food catastrophe. We're going to talk about that in a bit. But first, I think it's important for us to talk about how we got here. Clearly, this situation didn't happen overnight. What led to the situation where we're at right now, Mr. Fausto?
Well, as far as the country is concerned, we failed to focus on production. With the coming of the COVID, there was a lack of market and there was an oversupply of chicken, and we continued to import upon the pleading of the poultry growers to stop the importation because they have oversupply. Because of our commitment with the WTO. So therefore, the next time around, the poultry growers now cut down on their loading on their poultry farms, and thus we have a low production. Now that we will be needing more, that the economy is coming back, and the hotel restaurants are now coming back, we will need more supply. Similarly, we have problems because of the Ukraine-Russia war, which is which everybody in the world is affected, and oil has increased, but the wheat, the most important is wheat, because these two countries represent 29% of the wheat production in the world. As a matter of fact, some of our feed millers have now ongoing shipment coming from India, and India has expanded their export of wheat, and four shipments are now cannot come in, and this will be a telling effect on our supply for bread, pasta, noodles, and so on. And for the rice, we have increased the price of urea, the inputs. Last year, 820 pesos per bag. Last week, we bought at 3,300 per bag. And because of this cost of inputs, I'm afraid that farmers will be cutting down on the input of fertilizer, resulting a lesser production of rice. So I now anticipate that I projected that this last quarter, which is a holiday season, we will have a shortage of food. And if we are relying on imports, there are several countries that have stopped exporting their products to protect their own domestic food security. I understand even today, I read that Malaysia has stopped exporting chicken. They will not be exporting chicken Of course, India and China has been importing, even though China is the biggest producer of wheat, they're still importing. And India, the second biggest, is the latest to stop the exportation of wheat. While we can import, where do you buy the import? That's therefore we are on our own.
Yeah.
We need to immediately supply and support our production immediately now. We have to subsidize the production of rice, bringing down the inputs so that there will be more production and load in and bring in post-harvest facilities immediately. Mm. So that's so meat and poultry.
Yeah. So to
can
your
be,
mind,
supported.
Yeah. So to your mind, Mr. Fausto, it's not a question of either we go for food security or do we become self-sufficient. You're saying that there are signs that point to self-sufficiency being the wisest choice at this point, given the global scenario as well, Mr. Fausto.
Yes, the focus should be production, although it might be a long-term process, but that is more sustainable rather than relying on import, cheap, subsidized import products. That is killing our producers because our producers cannot compete with subsidized products from abroad. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, the farmers and the producers will not be profitable. We have to treat our agricultural sector not as a charity sector. It has to be a good business profitable proposition so that people will invest. If we do not have an expansion on production, on investment on production, we will not be able to produce our own food and we will be relying on imports. And if these countries, as I told you, cut down and stop exporting to us, then we will not have no food. Then they will have a food shortage. We need immediately to focus on production.
Mr. Fausto, you know, you're not the first one who have, you know, said this. You're not the first one who has said that, you know, we need to look at our agriculture sector, as you mentioned, not as a charity sector, but as a partner. But why do you think, despite these calls in the past decades, that these calls have not been heeded? Who stands to gain from the status quo?
In the past, importation normally ends up with the profit for the traders. So there are people that have benefited from international trade, especially the traders, the importers. The agricultural sector has been always given a second priority. Food production is always a second priority. I don't know how we can have good education, we have good health, and even our national security. If we do not have food in our stomach, how can we survive? This is a basic item. Mm. We need to really provide them with access, easy access to credit. We need to double the budget of the Department of Agriculture so that proper post-harvest facilities and value chain, supply chain can be supported. These things has to be done. The consolidation of land to make it more economically, you know, have economies of scale. Mm. And first border inspection, quarantine facilities to prevent the incoming of African swine fever, who's been killing our hogs. And it will take a while until we discover a vaccine to protect our hogs and the pigs from African swine fever. Then we will not be able to see a recovery of the hog sector. And the poultry, we need corn. We need to support. If you want to solve the problem of livestock and poultry for our protein consumption, we need to solve the problem of corn because that's the basic ingredient. 70% of cost of feeding the pork and the pigs are coming from feeds, and 60% of feeds is corn. And we do not. Corn is only 57% sufficient. We have not been supporting corn. We have supported rice, but we have forgotten corn. You have the NFA for rice. Before it was there was a rice and corn administration. Now there's only the rice administration. We have forgotten corn. And now the one that will suffer will be poultry and livestock.
I want to go back to what you said about a while ago when you said that there were importations that had to be made because of a WTO commitment. I want to get your thoughts now about RCEP. To your mind, will it really facilitate trade? Will it facilitate FDIs? Can it be seen as an insurance policy as well? What are your thoughts regarding RCEP and entering into that deal?
The RCEP is a good trade agreement. It's more focused rather than the WTO, but we should not be able to experience the mistake that we had in the WTO. The WTO, after the WTO, laws were passed in order to protect and support our beleaguered losers. We have in a trade agreement, there are winners and losers. In the winners, we support our exports. We increase our export, the variety of our products we export. But the losers, we need to provide protection by giving them enough support and financial assistance and credit and everything, as I said, the value chain has to be there so that they can be able to be competitive, to bring down the cost of their production. And when they bring down the cost of production, and then more profit will come, and then more expansion and investment will come. Mm. And it will, that RCEP is did not erase the WTO. It did not erase existing free trade agreements that we had before. So if that is that RCEP agreement is not viable for a certain transaction, we can go and impose a WTO or other free trade agreement which exists. Hmm. So we can choose. So therefore, there are only 33 items that were given as a negotiating for RCEP. But the more sensitive products were all removed and segregated. So therefore, these products which are staple to us, pork, rice, corn, and everything, they were segregated. So we are okay with RCEP because. Okay. As far as the agricultural sector is concerned, we have the entire value, global value chain that is available to us. That's how I see it.
Okay. Mr. Fausto, a while ago you did make a mention as well that you see this, the food catastrophe, the food shortage happening later part of this year. We have a new administration coming in. What to you must they do right from the get-go to make sure that shortage that you warn of won't happen?
Well, immediately we need to have data, exact real data, so that we will know what to attack. We need to have focus on what products should be immediately, because we have limited resources. Because of our debt burden and the giving of the Mandanas ruling of 27% down to the local government, there was really a diminished budget allocation for the national level. So therefore, we have to be very, very sure on what kind of product we have to support and what we have to be focused and try to the target. And we need data. Immediately, we need data and provide immediately the support. If not, because July to December, when we load this July, we plant this June and July, we harvest. If we do not protect our rice, then there will be no harvest come September, October. And likewise, the poultry will be loading their chicken if we will not be providing them with enough support so that we will have chicken during the Christmas season. So that's why I predict if we will not do this immediately, we will have a food shortage because we cannot import. We can always import. We might have the money to import, but who will be selling to us? Because everybody around the globe is protecting their own domestic security for their own people. Mm. So that's the trouble.
While we have you here, I also want to ask you about one of the campaign promises of incoming President Marcos Jr. During the campaign season, he did make a mention of a 20 peso per kilo rice. Do you think that's possible? And will that be to the detriment of our farmers?
Well, the way to go, normally the rule of thumb is if you have 20 pesos rice, your palay should be about 10 pesos per kilo. If we can bring down, just like in Vietnam and in Thailand, where the cost is only 6 pesos, 7 pesos, then the farmer will be making money. The solution there is to bring down the cost of production. And therefore, we're talking here of fertilizer, the basic irrigation. And so that's how and modern technology, mechanization. Mm. And if we can do this, then perhaps we can bring down the cost. But initially, perhaps, we have to work on this slowly, because it doesn't take overnight to do this. Bring down. Right now, with the increase of fertilizer from a 12.50, perhaps the cost now will be about 13 or 14 pesos per kilo. If we bring down to below 10 pesos per kilo, it will take a lot. But if you want immediately that the price will be 20, there will be a lot of subsidy from government that has to come up in order to bring down. And then NFA perhaps will be buying high and selling low. And a lot of losses will then again be incurred. So we have to do it slowly, and the entire value chain, the dryers, the rice milling in a small scale, given to the cooperatives immediately, direct from the producer to the retailer. No more. Let's try to eliminate and minimize the traders in between, because now the rice millers are no longer buying rice from the farmer. They are importing already, because importation is cheaper rather than buying palay from the farmer.
And finally, so Mr. Fausto, Mr. Fausto, we all know as well that agriculture, one of the key focuses as well of the incoming Marcos Jr. Administration, even during the campaign season, is mentioning agriculture as well. But you just painted to us sort of a dire picture of the agriculture sector. What must this incoming administration do to sort of shift the trajectory of the agriculture sector? Not immediate, but perhaps in the next 6 years during his term, what must be done?
We need to remove ourselves from dependence of imports. We need to focus on production. In India, in the 60s and 70s, they were import dependent. Now, they are the biggest exporter of grain. Even feeding 1.3 billion people, India now is an exporter. And because they focus on production, they relied on new technologies. They provided easy access. And that's how, and the value chain, and the new market concern of people, packaging, value chain, and supply chain. We need to support that, the entire thing. Not only production, producing the rice, but the input to rice and bringing that rice to the market. And that's how the entire thing. Not only rice, we have to talk about corn. We need to produce more corn, because corn is the basis in order to improve our poultry and livestock, our pigs.
So there's, in that other words, there's got to be like, we have to see a massive investment and movements in investment in the agriculture sector to be able to really change the trajectory and change the paradigm there. We've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate all your insights. Mr. Danilo Fausto there, President of the Philippine Chamber of Agriculture and Food Incorporated. Really appreciate you coming to the show. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, more details emerge about the deadly school shooting in Texas. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The economic managers of the incoming Marcos administration give a glimpse on how they will tackle the Philippines' economic woes. Journalists up in arms over the exclusion of several networks from Thursday's press briefing of President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky throws a fresh criticism against the West over the ongoing Russian invasion. Back with more news, President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s media briefing Thursday raising eyebrows among journalists. That's because the Marcos camp invited only three networks to the event. For a veteran journalist, the behavior of the Marcos camp is no longer surprising. Virgel Santos says this behavior was evident even during the campaign period.
Is anyone surprised? I mean, we were given a foretaste of this during the campaign. During the campaign, this is what Marcos did. And even before then, we must all remember that Marcos was raised, indulged, in fact, in an environment of autocracy. So this is what he knows. Now, he has not been acquainted professionally or even intellectually
with a free environment.
Media professor Danilo Aro, for his part, says journalists can still find a way to ferret out the truth, even if the incoming administration will attempt to limit media's access to the president.
So we're now having a credibility crisis. As early as now, the administration has not yet started. They're not just reinventing the dictionary. They are trying to create an alternative reality that would, in due time, be exposed for the fakery that it is. So that's the message that should be kept in mind by the incoming administration. The critical media will be after them forever, and they cannot cover up all of the lies.
The Marcos camp said it was merely fulfilling a commitment it made to three networks in attendance during the campaign period. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin reiterates his call for the release of Philippine opposition Senator Laila de Lima. At a Senate Appropriations Committee hearing, Durbin asked U.S. Agency for International Aid Administrator Samantha Power if more could be done to help de Lima. Power believes the Philippines' transition to a new administration provides a renewed opportunity to push for de Lima's release. De Lima has been locked up in Camp Crame since February 2017 over what she calls politically motivated drug charges.
Been in prison 5 years. Duterte's vengeance against her politically. Now a new regime on the way. Is there anything more we can be doing to help her?
With a new government that doesn't, that itself, you know, wasn't invested in the prior decision to arrest Madam de Lima, you know, it seems like a very good occasion to make a diplomatic push. And I think the ones that are the most effective are executive and legislative branches together operating in unison. So we can follow up on that.
In 2020, Durbin was among those who pushed for the passage of a bipartisan resolution calling for de Lima's release. He has since reiterated that call in a joint statement with five other U.S. senators following the recantation made by key witnesses against de Lima. A Muntinlupa court junks an indirect contempt case against detained Senator de Lima and lawyer Filibonta Cardon. Our correspondent Mike Navallo now joins us with details. Mike.
The Muntinlupa court has dealt an indirect contempt case against the state senator Laila de Lima and attorney Filibonta Cardon over an oil state media about the center's drug cases. Muntinlupa Regional Trial Court Branch 206 Judge Henry Quito granted de Lima Cardon's motion to dismiss, saying that what Cardon said to the media are mere echoes of the testimonies of the prosecution witnesses, and the court does not find Alice in them. Governing prosecutors in December 2020 filed a petition for indirect contempt against de Lima and Cardon, accusing them of violating the substantive rule to force parties to away from the substantive merits in public to avoid influencing the outcome of the case. They cited two statements by Cardon to the media that officials of the Philippine government assessment agency and the anti-money laundering council have allegedly cleared de Lima from the illegal drug charges, and the drug lord Vicente C admitted on the witness stand.
All right, that was Mike Navallo joining us on the line. We're going to try and get him back on the line. We're going to try and fix his audio right there. But before that, we move on with the rest of the news. The Philippine Commission on Elections proclaims the winners in the party list race. ACT-CIS topped the Derby, entitling them to three seats in Congress. Getting two seats each are one rider party list, Dingog, for Peace, Ako, Bicol, and Sagip. Ang Probinsyano, Sibak, and Duterte Youth, among others, will get one seat each. Meanwhile, United Senior Citizens Party list was not proclaimed, pending the resolution of its motion for reconsideration of the denial of its registration. World News Now, the gunman in Texas apparently walked into the school unobstructed. Authorities say the shooter, who killed 19 children and two adults, crossed the school grounds without being confronted. He entered the building through an unlocked door. The gunman was in the school for more than an hour. Police believe most of the victims were shot within the first few minutes of his arrival. They insist officers responded within minutes but had to take cover after the gunman fired at them. These new details now raise questions on school safety precautions and law enforcement's response. Firearms have surpassed motor vehicle crashes as the leading cause of death among American children. Latest data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show a strong rise in gun-related homicides, such as the killing of 19 children in the recent Texas school rampage. Overall, 4,368 children and adolescents up to the age of 19 died from firearms. By comparison, there were 4,036 deaths linked to motor vehicles. Former U.S. President Donald Trump and other prominent Republicans still plan to appear at the National Rifle Association's annual meeting in Texas Friday. Trump says he will keep his longtime commitment to speak at the convention. He asserts the U.S. needs real solutions and leadership, not politicians and partisanship. The manufacturer of the assault rifle used in the Texas attack has dropped out of that convention. The NRA, the most powerful gun lobby in the country, has faced fresh criticisms in the wake of the latest mass shootings in the U.S. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky throws fresh criticism against the West. Zelensky says the catastrophic unfolding of events in this country could have been avoided if the West did not flirt with Russia instead pressed Moscow to end the war. He adds pressure on Russia is literally a matter of saving lives. Zelensky's criticism of the West has mounted in recent days as he grew frustrated with the European Union's sluggish moves towards a possible Russian oil embargo. On the ground, thousands of Russian forces try to encircle the key cities of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk. According to Western military analysts, the battle for these two cities could be a potential turning point in the war. Russian President Vladimir Putin says Moscow is ready to help avert a looming food crisis on one condition. He says the West should first lift sanctions imposed on Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. Putin made those statements during a phone call with Italy's Prime Minister Mario Draghi. Russia was slapped with unprecedented sanctions after Putin ordered troops to storm neighboring Ukraine on February 24. The sanctions and military action have disrupted supplies of fertilizer, wheat, and other commodities from both Russia and Ukraine. The two countries produce 30% of the global wheat supply. Taking another break still ahead. Tourists soon to be allowed into Japan. More details when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back with more news, and we have back on the line our correspondent Mike Navalio for more on the Muntinlupa court's junking of an indirect contempt case against detained Senator Laila De Lima and lawyer Filibonta Cardon. Mike.
Carmina, a Muntinlupa court has junked an indirect contempt case against detained Senator Laila De Lima and attorney Filibonta Cardon over the lawyer's statements to the media about the center's drug cases. Muntinlupa Regional Trial Court Branch 206 Judge Hiner Ito granted De Lima and Tacardon's motion to dismiss, saying that what Tacardon said to the media were mere echoes of the testimonies of the prosecution witnesses and the court did not find malice in them. Government prosecutors in December 2020 filed a petition for indirect contempt against De Lima and Tacardon, accusing them of violating the sub judice rule, which bars parties to a case from discussing the merits in public to avoid influencing the outcome of the case. They cited two statements by Tacardon to the media that officials of the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency and the Anti-Money Laundering Council have allegedly cleared De Lima from the illegal drug charges, and that drug lord Vicente C. admitted on the witness stand that he has never met the senator despite previously claiming he gave 500,000 pesos as campaign funds to De Lima in 2012. And the court said Tacardon's statements did not meet the clear and present danger test in assessing whether statements are contemptuous and that there was no violation of the sub judice rule because Tacardon only restated the admissions of the prosecution witnesses and his statements were not fabricated, edited, slanted, or couched in such a manner that it may influence the judge. Tacardon also did not discuss the merits of the case, nor did he analyze the impact of the admissions. De Lima was supposedly complicit in Tacardon's statements to the media by authorizing the lawyer to make the claims, but the court rejected this allegation. The ruling comes after two key witnesses against De Lima retracted their allegations against her. In April, self-confessed drug lord Corwin Espinosa took back all these allegations against De Lima during a 2016 Senate hearing that he gave a total of 8 million pesos in drug payoffs to Dilima when he was Justice Secretary, when she was Justice Secretary to her former driver, Ronnie Dayan. Former Bureau of Corrections OIC Rafael Ragos also recanted his testimony that he personally delivered 10 million pesos of alleged drug money to Dilima at her house in Parañaque. Dayan has also recanted her his earlier testimony that he received money from Espinosa. Dilima has moved to dismiss one of her two pending drug cases by submitting Ragos' affidavit. Dilima has maintained the cases against her are political persecution. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Mike Navalio there. Japan's border is about to reopen to foreign tourists for the first time in 2 years, but travelers will only be allowed in with tour groups. The Japanese government says it will resume accepting package tours from 36 countries and regions where the COVID-19 situation is relatively stable. The countries include Britain, Spain, Canada, Saudi Arabia, and Malaysia. Japan will also expand the number of airports that accept international flights. All arrivals have to test negative before travel to Japan and must be tested again upon arrival. Triple vaccinated people coming from certain countries can skip the additional tests. Shanghai unveils more post-lockdown plans as it moves towards a return to normalcy after an Omicron-fueled surge in cases. City officials said students in junior and senior high school can return to face-to-face classes beginning June 6th. Shopping malls and department stores will also be allowed to reopen starting June 1st. The 25 million residents of China's financial hub had been under lockdown since early April. The Philippine Health Department seeing better numbers of daily COVID vaccinations. Health Undersecretary Mirna Cambotaje says around 200,000 jabs are being administered daily in the past few days. That's higher compared to the figure reported before and during the elections. The agency hopes government's target to inoculate 77 million Filipinos will be achieved before President Duterte's term ends.
With great effort, we hope we can achieve the 77 million. Pinag-iibayo po natin yung ating bakunahan sa ating mga 5 to 11 years old. Mas maganda ang reception in some areas of vaccination of COVID for the 5 to 11 kasi nasanay na yung mga bata. Pati yung mga parents, alam na nila na may mga bakuna na dapat sa mga bata. Nagfo-focus tayo sa mga low-performing na areas para makita kung paano natin na tataasan. Siyempre, ang isang napakalaking kailangan natin gawin, hanapan yung mga hindi pa nakaka-second dose kasi sila ang magpapataas ng ating fully vaccinated na mga datos.
The European Union working on centralizing the purchase of vaccines and treatments for monkeypox. The EU also took on a centralized role in the purchase of billions of doses of COVID vaccines for its member states. The European Commission, however, says the monkeypox situation is different as its transmissibility and risks are not comparable to COVID. The push comes as the number of monkeypox cases worldwide has now reached 219. In business, the Philippine Central Bank hits another rate hike next month. BSP Governor Benjamin Diokno said the central bank is inclined to raise rates by another 25 basis points during its June 23rd meeting as part of its policy normalization. The BSP hiked interest rates this month by 25 basis points to 2.25% to curb rising inflation. It is the first rate hike since 2018. Back in November 2020, the BSP cut key interest rates to a record low of 2% to support economic recovery from the pandemic. In sports, the Golden State Warriors are back in the NBA Finals after eliminating Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks. Our North America Bureau Chief TJ Manotok now joins us with a wrap of the Game 5 clincher. TJ, good afternoon from Manila. Over to you.
Hi, good evening, Carmina, from San Francisco. Right outside the Chase Center, it's a party tonight in San Francisco. It was a louder party a few moments ago, as most of the people have gone home or gone to the nearby bars. But yes, a big, big win for the Golden State Warriors. They're back in the finals thanks to a 4-1 series win in the Western Conference Finals against the Dallas Mavericks. Their win tonight was 120-110 They dominated and took control of it from the start to the finish. Clay Thompson had the biggest game of his playoffs.
Direct pictures tayo ng Warriors, Mavericks.
It's a big return to the finals for the Warriors. Their sixth time in the last 8 years. The last time they were in the finals was in 2019 when they lost to the Toronto Raptors. And then a lot of injuries really stifled them the last 2 years. But now they are back in the finals. And the first time as well for the Chase Center. The first time for San Francisco, because the last five trips to the finals was over across the bay at Oakland, at the old Oakland Arena, which they used to call the Oracle Arena. But now the San Franciscans will get a taste of the NBA Finals starting in June 2, and they're going to find out who they're going to play against here as they host Game 1 and Game 2. It could be the Boston Celtics or the Miami Heat of our Kababayan, Filipino-American at Scotia. But the Boston Celtics are up 3-2, and we'll see what happens in that side of the series tomorrow.
Well, TJ, they're back, but it wasn't easy. Tell us about how the Warriors were able to rebuild their franchise after losing star forward Kevin Durant.
Absolutely. It was tough. And not only that, they had to deal with a lot of injuries. For Klay Thompson, who was out for almost 2 years. Steph Curry was out for almost a year in 1 year as well. But they really relied on the resiliency of their team and their organization. They built some good role players the last couple of years. Kevon Looney, Jordan Poole to be specific, and even Gary Payton III. These are three key guys who were able to flourish in the last couple of years with the absence of Thompson and Curry. And it's great that they've also been able to still incorporate themselves, even though now they have a full complement of their superstars back in tow. So it's a very deep team the Warriors have right now, probably arguably deeper than they had back in their 6 years straight in the finals, five straight finals appearances up to 2019. So it's going to be interesting to see and who they will be facing on the other side of the West.
Of course, tonight is the Warriors' night, but we got to talk about the Mavericks as well. They have a superstar in Luka Doncic, but it seems they need another established star to get them over the hump. Who could be the perfect wingman for Doncic?
Well, they had a great run this season, Carmina. Not a lot of people expected the Mavericks to go this deep into the playoffs and into the Western Conference Finals. They took out the Phoenix Suns, who was the number one team throughout the season, the whole league, and they had a miserable end to their playoff run in the second round. It's still mind-boggling how they didn't make it this far. But a great performance nonetheless for the Mavericks. But they do lack a few key pieces, as you know, people are expecting them to make it over the hump. This is their superstar right now, Luka Doncic. And if they had one or two more great pieces, they could get there. And now that they've proven how they can play great, good coaching staff, good defense, it may attract that additional talent that they just need to get over to the NBA Finals. So a good showing for them, and hopefully it's appealing for another superstar to join Luka Doncic on the Mavericks starting next year.
All right, so back to the Warriors now. Now they wait for the winner of the Celtics-Heat series. What are analysts saying about Game 6, where Boston could close out the series?
Yeah, well, Boston obviously is the favorite team right now. They're playing much better in the last two games as compared to the Heat. The Heat have struggled. Specifically, their starting guards have really not given them enough. Kyle Lowry, who's a superstar, was expected to really show his playoffs and finals experience, but he has yet to show up for the Heat. They have their backs against the wall now, down 2-3. Boston can close it out at home at the TD Garden in Boston, so they are heavily favored. But you can't count out the resilient Miami Heat as an organization. They're known to be very tough, and they are fighters from the very end. And that's the kind of culture that Pat Riley and Coach Eric Spoelstra has instilled in them these past many years. So it should be a fun one to watch tomorrow for me.
Well, whether it's the Celtics or the Heat emerging from the East Finals, what do you think? Do you think the Warriors are still the team to beat?
Well, I'm glad I'm no longer an NBA analyst, so people will not hate me for bias. But if you're asking me to pick, I think the Warriors are favored right now, regardless if it's the Celtics or Heat, a little bit, by a bit, not by a big margin. So it's still going to be a great final series, regardless of who makes it across from the Eastern Conference.
Well, I just thought I had to add that there. Enjoy the night, Teej. The night is still young. I think people are still out. Take care, though, and keep safe.
Will be. Thanks,
Shamina. All right. TJ Manotok there, our North America Bureau Chief, talking to us about the Warriors' win. All right, back here in the newsroom, U.S. President Joe Biden will receive K-pop superstars BTS next week at the White House. It will be part of a series of events celebrating Asian Americans. Biden and BTS are expected to discuss Asian inclusion and address anti-Asian hate crimes and discrimination. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.